Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Nuance Needed podcast. I'm Amanda White.
And this is Sam Dalton.
And we today are going to be talking about influencer culture. Specifically, there's been a lot of articles about how influencer culture has changed, burnout. There's also a really interesting Washington Post article that mapped misinformation and the TikTok algorithm. So we're going to wade through all that. Sam, why don't you kick us off?
Thank you, Amanda, for handing off
the news anchor.
Amanda will be back at 7 with the weather. I've loved makeup for a really long time. I've loved beauty for a really long time. I have never been a huge YouTuber. I would say like that 2015 to 2018 kind of golden age of like the YouTube how-tos and challenges and that kind of cultural moment. So like beauty reviews, makeup reviews, fashion culture, like all of that. I was never a YouTube consumer of that, but I was very much a social media consumer of that. So the big names around that time were Jackie Aina, Jeffree Star, Manny MUA, Jaclyn Hill, Laurel Lee, Nikki Tutorials. There were kind of these like titans at the time who were some of the first that were doing product collaborations with different companies, and they were getting into Sephora, and they were kind of, or Ulta as well, and they were getting some of the first to start their own brands and to have been entrepreneurs that started as influencers and then started their businesses as a result. A very interesting full circle moment for me was a couple weeks ago, Jaclyn Hill, who was one of those original beauty influencers. I think she started posting on YouTube like in 2012, 2013.
Wow.
So she's been around for a while. She has well over a million followers, and she had posted a video expressing frustration with the algorithm. Now, when I went back to watch this video, I actually, from a content creator perspective, I understood what she was trying to say. Because in the video, what she was saying is, how can I have millions of followers and my videos are only getting shown to 30,000 people? And she expressed a frustration of, I don't understand. It doesn't make sense. I'm posting consistently. I'm showing up the same way I have been. I don't get it. Now, of course, the average person ripped her to shreds.
Yeah.
And it immediately became, we don't relate to you. We don't relate to your luxury hauls. We don't care about the content you make. You're posting your big, huge house and I can't afford my rent. I'm not interested in this anymore. Long story short, as I said just a second ago, I don't relate to you. That was like the messaging.
And like, stop complaining because like, cry me over.
Exactly. Like, you've made your wealth. You've built your, you know, platform, your business, whatever. Why are you whining? So a lot of people said, go back to how-tos. We miss how-tos. Like, tell us what to do, blah, blah, blah. Which, like, I don't understand why people were asking for that, because it's like, it doesn't change. The application of makeup doesn't change. It just is what it is. The next videos that she posted got like well over a million views, and people were like, oh, look at you. You're listening. Like, you're learning from us, blah, blah, blah. So I thought that that was a really fascinating moment, because I was seeing a lot of opinion pieces on that situation where it opened the door to a larger conversation around, we're burnt out on the influencer lifestyle. Many people are tired of feeling like they're just being sold to, that they're only good for consumption. This isn't about community at all, which a lot of them talk about, like, my community. I love my community. I'm here for my community. When it's just like all they do is just like service ads, and how the influencer life has become a luxury lifestyle. The whole point of why people do it is that they will eventually build wealth, right? It's a way to make big money fast. I don't think it is anymore. I think it used to be. I don't think it is anymore. And I think social media is flooded with people trying to be influencers in some way. And I think the other interesting phenomenon in the last couple of weeks is what happened with Vlogmas.
No, what is that?
So Vlogmas is an age-old tradition. that really started through YouTube creators, but also kind of spawned to TikTok a little bit in the last couple of years. So it is when you make some sort of a holiday themed day in my life or how to or whatever every single day in December. Yeah, like Christmas, it's Vlogmas.
Got it.
And everybody attempted to do Vlogmas, including people that had no following, because all of the marketing gurus were saying, you have to do Vlogmas. You have to be involved in Vlogmas. And the second anybody posted their Vlogmas, their views like tanked, plummeted, because it was so saturated. The videos weren't going anywhere. They also all looked the same. You can only see so many Christmas trees and so many garlands and so many ornament placements and so many gingerbread cookies. There's only like, everybody has a saturation point for consumption in that way. So these two events, this Jaclyn Hill situation, and then I think the Vlogmas, paint this really interesting inflection point that I think we're at, where we've been in this social media consumption influencer world for well over a decade now. And combine fatigue with that, with fatigue in the current economic situation that many of us are in. We're struggling with inflation. We're struggling with the cost of living in general, feeling like a dollar just does not get you anything anymore, right? A dollar being the concept of like however much money you make, your spending power has diminished. And then you are seeing these people doing Hermes unboxings and showing stuff that they're gifted and these insane, elaborate holiday presentations that they put on for people.
It is such wasteful insanity to watch people have themes every year.
I can't.
For their holidays. I didn't even put up my Christmas ornaments on my tree. I just have like a bare tree because I'm just like, I don't want to fight with my toddler about taking everything down. And honestly, if it's not her, my puppy is going to jump up and steal all of the ornaments. I also just think like Thanksgiving is so close to Christmas this year.
Yeah.
My official belief is that we need to stretch it out.
This is where the Europeans, as per usual, win in my mind, because they all hit Christmas spirit that first week of November. And so they have like weeks to kind of settle into it.
It's too much, especially with Thanksgiving and Christmas being so close this year. There has been, right? There was the Halloween party, which we geared up for. We bought food for. We got our costumes. We went to their little costume parade. We volunteered. And then all of a sudden I looked around and then they were like, we're having a Thanksgiving dinner at daycare. We need volunteers. Come dress your child up like a pilgrim. I was on vacation. I was like, no, I'm not doing this. And then all of a sudden I totally missed it this way. And everyone comes with a 5-day spirit week where you have to dress up in different ways, which I haven't participated at all. And Peyton was like, why? Like my friend was wearing Grinch pajamas. Like, why don't I have Grinch? I didn't even buy her holiday pajamas. Like, it just feels so wasteful.
Mm-hmm. At that age.
It just feels so wasteful. I'm like, I'm going to buy these. And God bless the people who love it. And like, that's great. I am just not like Christmas spirit, you know, extraordinaire. And I did some of that when she was little, but I don't know. I don't like having my child in Christmas pajamas after Christmas. And it just feels really wasteful to buy these crappy pajamas off of Amazon that fall apart and don't fit her well so that I can get a picture of them and so she can wear them for a few weeks. So yeah, I missed Spirit Week. Apparently there was a holiday party yesterday that I didn't even know about that we didn't even go to.
I personally think from an outside perspective as a not parent.
Yeah.
The pressure y'all have on y'all shoulders to make this the most magical thing ever, all the time, every second. It's too much. It's not sustainable. It's not sustainable in any way. And I think so many of my clients this year have been saying they're not in the holiday spirit at all. And I think there is this collective burnout where I think we have done too much too many years in a row. If I can tie this all in to like the influencer culture.
Yeah.
I think what has happened as a result of the opulence that influencers often portray is that simple has become not enough.
Yeah.
Simple and meaningful. And I mean this outside of the holidays. I mean this in your day-to-day life. I mean this in your interactions, the expectations you have for yourself, simple has become weak almost. Yeah. Like if you do something simple, you haven't put in enough effort.
Yeah.
And you need to be doing more.
Yeah.
And I think this is for all of us girlies that are perfectionists, anxious, we lean into people pleasing. This messaging years and years and years and years and years in a row, that is tension.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, the pressure that we put on ourselves and the pressure I see parents putting on themselves for even how kids' birthdays look or what they have to do for the holidays or what they have to do for events. And we need to create these meaningful moments and blah, blah, blah. And I think if you have the time, the energy and the resources and you derive joy from that, I think that's lovely. None of this is saying you shouldn't do these things or you can't do these things. But I also think a lot of people are hating themselves into doing these things because they want to demonstrate externally how much they care.
Yes. And I also think the problem that we forget a lot is like these influencers are doing new holiday decorations every year because it's content. If they were not doing this, if they were not selling stuff, mm-mm, they wouldn't be doing it, right? If they weren't trying to get new photos of what their holiday season looked like this year that needs to separate them from last year, or even birthday parties and stuff like that, or the influencers that are like, make thousands of cookies with me, when we don't realize or think about how this is an influencer who needs new content. She's trying to constantly, or they're trying to constantly come up with new things that they can talk about. That's not an, like, we internalize it as like, what's wrong with me? I should be doing this too, rather than thinking about there's a reason they're doing this.
Right. They're selling something. I went to hang out with my friend the other night and we ended up in a debate about some of these creators because we started talking about the Jaclyn Hill situation. And one of the other lifestyle creators that came up was Nabella. Are you familiar with her? So she started as a makeup influencer and YouTuber, and she has evolved into truly opulence. Like her home is insane. It was built in like the 1910s. It's a Georgian revival. It has this marble sculpture on top of the fireplace in the kitchen. Everything is just so curated and perfect. And she has, you know, Hermes bangles on her and the Cartier bangles, and her girls are always matching. And she's by the sink, like laughing with them as they try to wash stuff on their special stool. And I just think that's not real.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. It's stunning, but it is curated.
Yeah.
And I think no shade to her, because there are some things that she shows, I'm like, you have phenomenal taste, Nabella. Yeah. Like, way to go, girl. Like, this is not hate. But I think that type of influencer is the type of person that is really burning people out.
Yeah. Well, I unfollowed Becca Bloom the other day because I just was like, I don't care. I don't like, and I think what's really fascinating is we've been talking about oversaturation. As this becomes saturated, as there's tons of influencers, as really it feels like in the past, I don't know why, you can probably say more than me, this like extreme luxury, like watching Rachel Postel doing extreme luxury now is so confusing to me.
It's so confusing.
Clearly it's working on some level. I don't know where this extreme opulence shifted. I guess we had enough years post-COVID that we decided it was okay. I feel like that wouldn't have flown during COVID.
No, because it didn't.
Yeah.
What happened was around 2022, I saw a New York Times article about this. I think if I know my dates correctly, it would have been about 2023. And it really stuck out to me. What they noted was that immediately at the start of the pandemic, when everything went off a cliff, companies, in order to try to make ends meet,
mm-hmm,
and this is across industries, started marketing to essentially the top 10%.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I read that New York Times article too. It talked about how Disney is like purposefully trying to only market. They don't want to be a middle class institution anymore.
And even they said, if you notice the branding of cleaning product brands that are coming out now, or specialty foods, or, you know, kitchenware, homeware, all of it is geared towards the people that can actually afford it, because they recognize that there was a collapse in job market, in income, keeping pace with inflation, in spending power. All of that for the bottom 80% was essentially shattering.
Right.
And so over the last 2-3 years, that's why it feels like everything has become about hitting the 10 people that can afford, that have endless sums of discretionary income. And so I think that's why some of these content creators leaned into that with abandon, because it felt like those were the only people that could compete and they could still get consistent sales from. And people like Rachel Parcell decide like, well, I like Dior, so I'm going to talk about the Dior boots that I bought, which like, she's another one I could do a whole episode on, but I don't want to waste air on her. But there is kind of this, it's why all of a sudden it feels like a couple years ago, everything became opulent and luxury and wealth. And here's also like the quiet luxury trend and old money and leaning into the obsession with generational wealth and wealth porn and Christmas hauls and this is how my family vacations for summer and this is where we stay in the summer and where we stay in the winter, right? So it's all converged into this moment where the average person just cannot reconcile how vastly different the realities are, the reality of their day-to-day, which matches most people, to the content that they're having shoved down their throat and being asked to buy and support these people, essentially, with nothing in return.
Yeah, and I think it was unique a couple years ago, yeah. Right? It was like unique to see people, especially really wealthy people, sort of pull back the curtain and talk about these extreme things like Becca Bloom, right? Talking about, look at the 10 houses we bought that are each probably over $10 million that weren't good enough for us. Like, right. It is fascinating in a way and voyeuristic in a way that gives people views. But I think now so many people are doing that, that it's also not interesting mm-hmm. anymore. And I just think it's fascinating because if everyone is doing the same thing, no one is it. Like everything,
right.
Right? It's the idea of if everything is rage bait, nothing is rage bait. Mm-hmm. When everything is so saturated, the only thing you can do to stand out is be different, is top yourself, is do more and more and more. And I think that's the trap that some people are caught into. And I think especially this year with AI and the train wreck of all of that with AI ads and other things that have happened. I mean, someone asked the other day, like, what are you most interested in online? And I was like, the things that are most interesting to me online these days are people that are anti-consumption, people who are showing how they're less, right? It's ironic because they're like on digital platforms talking about how to disconnect from digital platforms. I can see the irony, but it's interesting to me because I do feel like we're hitting this mass saturation where you can, the amount of input we are just flooded with all day. Sometimes I feel like we are just like the metaphor that comes to my brain is we are just injecting ourselves with content all day long and input. And even like with, you know, the other day I had this moment of being like, oh my God, I was literally consuming content all day long. You know, you get up, you scroll your phone, you're at work, you're sitting, right? You and me, we like work from home. We're doing a podcast, we're talking to people, but everything is through a screen, or you're looking at a big screen on your little screen. Then I go work out and I'm looking at another screen to work out. And then I'm like, especially me, like I can accidentally not leave my house sometimes. And then I'm like, oh my God, right? And then I'm falling asleep at night and I read on a Kindle and then I'm like taking in more information. And it's like the only time I wasn't taking in information was when I was in the shower. Like what? No wonder I can't think straight.
It's honestly hard to hear when you describe it like that, because all of a sudden for me, it registers as I'm constantly being stimulated in my brain.
Yes.
Constantly. Like, there's no moment where I'm just like, I'm just going to sit.
Yeah. Because we don't have to.
No.
Anymore. And then we lose that muscle. And I think it's so easy to feel like you're being productive in certain moments too, right? You're like, or at least for me, I'm like, well, I need to look up, you know, how to make this recipe, or I need to look up, you know, what, how to be a better parent. I need to order groceries. I need to look at my schedule. I need to text people. Like, there's, because everything is on your phone, like, you are being productive, but you still don't have a moment a lot of times unless you actively carve it out of just like sitting with yourself.
Well, for me, what I've realized is I'm not productive. I'm just busy.
Yeah.
I'm just busy. I'm just intaking information all day long. That's a good idea. I should do that. I'm going to try that. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that. And then because I'm doing that so much in addition to my work, I actually don't do anything.
Yeah.
I get to the end of the night and I'm spent. But then I think of all of the things that I saw that I thought were good ideas that I didn't do or I didn't try. Yeah. And I'm like, tomorrow's the day. Because if I keep scrolling, I will eventually know.
Yes.
I will know in capital letters. And it's like, you won't, because you can't, because it's endless.
Okay, so if you're listening to this episode and feeling like, oh my gosh, I could actually really use a therapist, we've got you. My practice, Therapy for Women Center, has therapists licensed in 43 states across the country. All the therapists are hired by me, trained by me, handpicked by me, and we really back and support our therapists. We vouch for them, unlike some of these big online therapy platforms. Also, if you're local to the Philadelphia area, we have 3 office locations there. So I would love for you to go to our website, therapyforwomencenter.com, and check it out.
I think something as a content creator that I'm kind of struggling with, and I don't know how you feel, I've been feeling like I'm contributing to the problem. Yet I try really hard to say like, well, I want what I put out to be meaningful, right? And I think what I've realized is, I know the person listening to this. This is like a behind the scenes peek, I think, into a lot of discussions that creators are having right now. Charlotte Grimmel, her account is The Mind Friend.
Yeah.
She's awesome. Charlotte, if you're listening, you're going to come on the pod. I'm going to ask you. But we chatted for the first time offline on Monday, and it was a really lovely conversation. And she had the most incredible viewpoint, I think, on all of this. And she said, I decided I had to stop caring about growth. She said, I had to stop caring about my post was going to go viral. I was going to get this many likes. It was only successful if this many people saw it. She says, I had to stop paying attention to my analytics, because for those of you listening, when you start posting, your analytics are your God. And it tells you how many people swiped past it, who liked it, how long they watched your video, at what point they liked your video in the space of watching it, when people, like the second the most people swiped away from your video, it is insane. And it will drive you insane if you focus on it too much. And she was just saying in general, like, she goes, I've realized and accepted that this is how business works now. Mm-hmm. Like, this genie isn't going away. It's still there. It's still a marketing platform for you. But she goes, I'm much more interested in figuring out how to speak to people that have communicated to me that they really like what I post. And I'm not so worried about having to have the whole world eyed on my platform.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that that was really powerful. And I think for everybody, I'm encouraging everybody, myself included, to like, just put your phone down.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not even trying to say that in a preachy way. I think dare yourself to go for a walk without having to have music or a podcast playing, without having to have, you know, checking TikTok or Instagram while you're waiting to cross the street. Like, just start letting your brain be bored.
Yeah.
And why are you, like, if that sounds awful to you, why?
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think especially it's even more clear to me with just the amount of like AI slop that's already on the internet. And I mean, really, when you see the percentages of how, I forget what that article said about the people that made the conspiracy theory about Taylor Swift being a Nazi, right? Like when you see that level of, right, I think someone in that article said like 50% of social media is bots. It really just makes you be like, what is this? This is insane. None of this is real. Why are we wasting all of our time and energy on it? I mean, I stopped checking analytics when I went through a phase a couple years ago where I was consistently losing followers all the time. And I was like, I can't just watch this every day. So I don't engage with it at all, because I'm just like, that is the name of it all. Now you're just going to be, you know, we've hit peak saturation and you're going to probably be losing followers. And other people, if you aren't, you know, there are obviously exceptions to this rule. Yeah, it's just crazy.
Yeah. And I know when I say like, just put your phone down, I think part of the problem too is a lot of people are like, but I don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how to. I think so many of us have lost the skills of how to practice building a life.
Yeah.
Like what it actually takes to build out your interests, build out friendships. And it, because all of that takes time.
Yeah.
All of that is going to take time. You are not going to have the life that you want overnight. Yeah. And I think when we see some of this idealistic content put forward, we see this end goal that we want, but nobody is telling us the actual steps needed to get to that place.
Yeah.
Like when you see Ralph Lauren, Nancy Meyers aesthetic, that is a lifetime of curated tchotchkes and things and photos and building a home. You cannot go to Home Goods and be like, tonight my home is going to be Ralph Lauren. Like you just, it's just not possible. And what I've been trying to do, even like in my own content, is helping empower people to be like, no, building your life is going to take time, and that's okay. That's okay. It's fine, because everybody's life takes time to build, and things happen that throw you off, and things that you wanted to do, but you haven't had time. And so you're going to make time to try. Like, you're not doing life wrong because things are slow.
Yeah. Let's dig into this Washington Post article, because I have it up and it's really wild. Essentially, what they did is they interviewed different people and they kind of mapped out their algorithms. And they start by talking about a woman who realized she had ADHD from TikTok. So she talks about how it did positively impact her life. You know, she got on medication, it made a big difference, but now she continues to get ADHD videos and she can't stop getting them. And she kind of went deeper and deeper into a rabbit hole. And what's fascinating is part of, right, the TikTok algorithm is that it learns what you like based on watching and skipping behavior. It takes skipping past 1.3 videos on average to undo the effect of watching one full video about cats or politics, the Washington Post analysis found. But for mental health, it takes 2.2 skips, meaning users must work much harder to get it out of their feeds. And what is really interesting is that mental health videos are much stickier than average topics, and they ranked essentially other topics. I mean, it's fascinating. So the most sticky videos are fashion and style. The next one is skincare. Then mental health. Then family relationships, sports, dogs, Taylor Swift, cats, politics, LGBTQ. And the difference between LGBTQ and mental health is it's twice that amount. But it is just so fascinating how certain topics are stickier than others, because we've also kind of been told that it's just what you like. You can control your algorithm. Just don't pay attention. But it's much harder for some of these topics. And this is also really, really fascinating. They kind of tried to understand this concept specifically. They said that the app's business incentives like offered some interesting, and it seems like what they kind of deduced is that users who see a lot of mental health videos spend longer on the platform and are more likely to spend money. And it makes sense why those topics then, if we look back at fashion and style, skincare, mental health, if those are topics where people are more likely to spend money, TikTok would want you to stay on the app to actually do this.
It's just a marketing platform. They're just marketing platforms. And they marketed it to us as connection.
Yeah. And then they know that if you watch mental health content, you are more you're more likely to watch Taylor Swift content, you're more likely to watch skincare content, and you're more likely to watch fashion and style content, which again, I think is so fascinating. Like I've talked to, I mean, let's be honest, the only person I've really talked to about their Instagram feed who is a straight man is my husband, but he like never goes on TikTok, but it's just fascinating, you know, and I've seen even stuff about, I think women like creating teenage boy profiles or whatever and trying to be really neutral about what they sit on versus what they swipe past. And it is just very interesting how they do create these feeds. Like straight men are disproportionately shown videos of like, you know, young women, sometimes even getting into like extremely young girls way more than everything else. And it is just this, it's not just that you create your algorithm, it's that reality is being created for you.
It's just so bad. Like, I don't know how we thought anything birthed from a platform that was designed to rate and judge women was going to bear any solid fruit. That should have been sign number one that this was never going to be anything redeemable. Or I think what's so sad is like, I remember the Instagram of old, like 2012 to 2017, before the algorithm was initiated. And I think that's what people don't understand is they specifically announced chronological order is gone. We are now going to be serving you content that you seem to like. And that was a very specific decision on their end because it was solely driven by ad spend. It was solely driven by ads. And they realized they were a business platform and they could charge people to push out their content. But in order to know how to push out the content, they needed to know what you were interested in. And so I think looping all the way back to this like saturation point from like a mental health perspective, I'm shocked we're only starting to feel this fatigued at this point. I think more of us have been fatigued for a lot longer than we recognize, but we've just, it's so ingrained and woven into every facet of our life now that it's like, well, I have to figure out how to be okay with it. And I have to figure out how to live with it. But I don't know how people can, I don't know. I don't know what the balance is right now because I think it is so harmful to so many people right now across the spectrum, across interests. I think people are spending too much time on it. I think they're anxious about the state of their day-to-day life, and being able to scroll TikTok for 2 hours at night allows them an escape. And the problem is that's 2 hours where they could be doing things that might actually help make their life better. But it feels easier to just numb out and get instant gratification every 1 to 3 seconds. And so it's just like a tragic doom loop.
Yeah. And I think it's hard because it's like, I kind of think of it like drinking. Like whenever people want to stop drinking and I talk to them, they're like, well, I need a replacement for my alcohol. And I'm always like, besides drugs, like there's not another replacement because alcohol does something like unnatural in your brain, essentially. And I think that's one of the hard things too, is we are just used to also this level of input that anything that feels not like that feels wrong, empty, boring, whatever. that it's really hard to just easily replace, and you have to rebuild a skill, and to rebuild the skill, you need sort of absence of this to rebuild it. But I also wonder if in this interesting way, right, if there were only a certain, if everyone wasn't a quote unquote creator, if it wasn't so oversaturated where every, almost everyone I know has, you know, because if you're a business owner in any instance, you are typically using it in this way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wonder if that weren't the case, if people would be more fed up, but because such a high proportion of people are also invested in it, like we are, it makes you more tolerant of it because you're getting something out of it at the same time.
The boredom piece is like really key here. Like something that I've been challenging myself to do is to not look at my phone while I'm at a stoplight.
Yeah.
To just like sit there.
Yeah.
And stare around me and stare outside and stare at the light. And I'm just like, humans did this forever up until about 10 years ago. So like, why can't I do that anymore? And your example of, you know, someone who's wanting to stop drinking, like, well, I need to replace it with something. It's like, well, what you're saying is I want a socially acceptable way to numb out.
Yeah.
I want a safe way to numb out that doesn't have the same consequences as alcohol or drugs or nicotine or anything addictive. The whole way you start to understand yourself better is that you have to be able to see yourself clearly. You have to be able to meet yourself exactly where you're at and radically accept your situation. And I think something interesting around going all the way back to the beginning with this luxury content and with influencer content and opulence and these vast displays of wealth, I think the average person consuming that has convinced themselves subconsciously that they're a part of that if they see it enough. Not that they have it or they have access to it, but they're a part of that world. And it lets them be out of it, like out of it being their day-to-day reality enough for a minute that it's almost enjoyable, even if they're bitter, resentful, angry, annoyed, right? They're able to go in the comments and see people ripping it to shreds, and they feel less alone, and they might even leave a comment like talking about how stupid it is or how stupid this person is. And so their resentment and their bitterness for their own life finally has a place to go. And I just think I want so many people to be able to feel like they have the skills that they need to live a life that's for them, without feeling like they have to be like consuming all of this, and for them to just have an idea off their own dome of how they want their Christmas to look or how they want to spend their New Year, to not feel like they need constant inspiration to figure it out, especially because you're going to receive so much inspiration that you're going to feel overwhelmed and you're not going to make a choice. And then you're going to be like, well, that means I need more inspiration. So I'm going to keep scrolling and eventually the right idea will find its way to me. And it's like, no, because then eventually the right idea that you stumble across is going to be so opulent and so ridiculous, you're going to be like, well, I can't do that. So I guess it's all stupid. So I'll do nothing.
Yeah. And I think it's really hard because I think everything is like black and white and give up everything, do nothing, do everything. There isn't a lot of nuance or good advice. And I don't even think we really have that much either of how do you be more mindful. And I shudder, what scares me, I guess, or what I shudder to think about most is if this would have existed when I was trying to get sober, I don't know if I ever would have gotten sober, because it would have been so easy to not sit with myself, to escape, to feel like I was doing something when I wasn't actually doing anything. And that is like just a very strange thought to think about the people who are trying to change. And I think how much harder it is right now when you just have this I don't know. It's so hard because I don't like the extreme takes of like, don't show your kids any TV. I think people get too wrapped up in that. I think that there are certain realities we need to accept. I think that there is something to be said for, you know, enjoying your time, and there's mm-hmm. funny stuff on the internet, and life is hard enough, and I don't want people to shame themselves for their behaviors either. But I also, yeah, think we have to really think critically. And I'm glad the Washington Post did that article. And I'm glad people saw about the Nazi stuff with Taylor Swift, because it's just – I remember being on TikTok and being super addicted to TikTok the summer before the election, when Kamala had just started taking off, and it felt like mainlining hope into my veins. And I felt so good, and I was like addicted to – the possibility that this was falling apart and this could really happen. And then I was so shocked and disappointed when it went the complete opposite way. And other people, I think, who weren't super deep into their algorithm weren't as shocked.
Yeah.
And we forget that it can really create this completely different alternate reality, and that the algorithm is invested in that because it cares about you staying on as long as possible and buying as much stuff as possible.
It's so true that like anything requires balance. Mm-hmm. Like anything requires an acceptance that very few things are either all bad or all good. And I think most things are actually neutral.
Yeah.
Right? Sure.
Okay. Heroin is bad.
But they've done studies, and people who went to the Vietnam War did heroin every day, and a lot of people came home and they didn't keep doing heroin because what changes a lot of times is that it's not even about the drug in a lot of ways. It's your relationship to the drug. Like people get addicted to drugs and alcohol when they have the experience that this thing is the thing that's been missing from my life, and they create an emotional attachment to it.
And also like opiates are pain relievers. So what do? We get rid of being able to use fentanyl in the ER when it's responsibly dosed and managed by professionals.
Yeah.
Right? Like I think with social media, like I think my content is really lovely and uplifting. And I think yours is the same. And there's a lot of content creators I follow that I enjoy, right? Yeah. Like that is my access to the British Isles when I am not there. It is absurd. My algorithm is embarrassing. But I think there's so much at play to this too, if we zoom out, going back to your example about the election, where people who feel economically stable, mm-hmm. who feel like they have a community of people that they can rely on and they can be supportive of in turn, feeling a general sense of purpose and meaning in their life, are much more difficult to manipulate because they have life satisfaction. And I think right now, so many people are struggling and suffering and hurting for a million different reasons. There's no one reason for why people are suffering, but it is a dopamine hit to be able to go somewhere and just have a place to be where nothing matters mm-hmm. and nothing is expected of them other than showing up and consuming. Mm-hmm. And it just starts this vicious cycle of like, well, this place is my escape. But then when the escape becomes incredibly toxic, what do you do?
Yeah.
Because they feel like they have no escape from that place.
Yep.
Because they're not happy with their life. They're not feeling fulfilled. They feel overwhelmed. They feel stuck. They feel trapped. So it's all – I hate to be this person. I'm not trying to be like a conspiracy theorist. Like it's just all connected.
It is. Yeah.
It's all connected, and it's all happening this way because – there's a lot of things not working right now. It does feel like it's not sustainable, but I don't know what comes after it, if that makes sense. I've had that thought a lot lately of like, well, what would we do? I mean, I think Australia's ban is brilliant. I think that's a good start. I don't think this is something children should have access to. I do not think children belong on social media at all, but I don't even think kids need access to scrolling.
Yeah.
They don't need to be inundated with that level of information. I have a very draconian opinion on AI in schools, where I don't think there should be any tech from 0 to 18. I think you need to learn how to read. You need to learn how to write. You need to learn how to think. You need to learn how to speak. I feel like you need to learn how to articulate an idea before you can be introduced to this tool. Mm-hmm. And I know that someone's going to be like, well, that's ridiculous because it helped my kid in a million ways. That's lovely. I love that for you. And it's also killing people's brains. So, but nobody wants to find a balance because that's boring and it takes time.
Yeah.
They want an immediate answer and something that's going to say, well, this is going to fix all of this thing, all of these things at the same time.
Yeah.
And then everything's going to be better and it's going to be fine. And it's like, no, like, we have dug ourselves into this hole for the last 15 years, and it's probably going to take us another 15 years to dig ourselves out.
This is what I always think about, is whenever we solve a problem, we create a new, more complicated problem.
That's a really good point.
I mean, it's pretty grim.
Amanda does tend to be the more grim one. I'm over here like, we can dig ourselves out, and Amanda's like, just more problems. You're going to think you're going to hit sky and you're going to hit that molten core and we'll all die together.
It's fascinating to be like, right, like email. We thought email would solve all of our problems. And now we have a more complicated problem called like we're all connected all the time. And what do we do? And now we have to set boundaries, right? Like social media like created, solved this problem of, democratizing content, democratizing access to different people. We want to hear from more people. Legacy media shouldn't control everything. And now, right, it's created all these other problems. You just like can't predict the problems that new things are going to solve. And it is, I have hope. It's just crazy and complicated. And I think it's hard because I think everyone, right, is like, well, it'll be fine for me. It'll be fine for my kids.
Yeah.
Maybe not for the next generation's kids, but it'll be fine for mine.
I also think like this is a larger conversation, but I think people are really afraid to have standards for themselves.
Yeah.
And I know that that sounds like really strong language because a lot of people will be like, well, I have expectations of myself. And it's like, but do you follow through on them?
Yeah.
Do you live them? How often are you breaking promises to yourself where you say like, well, I'm not going to do this, but then you do it anyway. And then you're kind of like, well, see, it's too hard, so I'm not going to do it. And I think that's almost become, that kind of ties into, I think, a lot of the self-help content and the therapy speak of like, don't do anything that makes you uncomfortable. Like, if you're uncomfortable, that's bad. And it's like, well, yeah, if you note that maybe you have an addiction to your phone, you have an addiction to content and consuming, and you feel like you're wasting so much time on there. And that's not, I think everybody does to a degree, honestly, nowadays. But if you recognize that, how do you address that then?
Yeah.
Right. And then I think people are like, well, like I can't. And it's like, well, it's going to be very uncomfortable to break that pattern of constantly checking your phone. It's going to require you legitimately changing and altering your behavior.
Yeah. I've seen some articles that's like being offline, being anti-screens is like becoming the new trendy thing, which sometimes I think we find the middle when we go too hard one way and then we
react
the other way, and that sometimes gives us an opportunity. Like, yeah, I think the best thing I did in 2025 was getting a brick and bricking my phone because it transformed my life and transformed how much clearer my head is. And I lost my brick. I don't know where it is, and I just want a new one because I was like, this is so important.
Yes.
And essential. And I think, I don't know, even like I think some of the nostalgia is coming back with, I've seen like a lot of like really great ads for Kodak, you know, the brand Kodak, for Polaroid, for things like that. And maybe some of those new technologies are things we can do. But yeah, it takes time. It takes skill. I think, I don't know. I try to have hope too with being like, we all thought post-COVID, no one would ever go back to the office. No one would ever want to go to a concert again. And that's completely false. Like, I do think there are certain fundamental human things. There is something called saturation where we truly crave something new. And I do think like even in person, you know, obviously there's a huge issue with the decline of third spaces and all of that. But I do think people are trying to connect more in person, and it does make a difference.
Yeah. And even I, like, something I really, my plan, this is happening in the new year, is I'm going to be hosting in-person events, and I want to gather people and I want to bring people together and I want to tap into that. And the hard thing that I wrestle with is like, I have to market this online and build attention for it online. So I have to ask people to stay online long enough to see my stuff, but then separate from it to like come to this thing. So now I get it. My dad was like, you should just put up flyers. I'm like, well, that doesn't work anymore. But like, it's, I mean, maybe it does. I don't know. But yeah, it's an interesting juxtaposition even to say like, okay, I want to be meeting people in real life, but then I still need this marketing tool to get enough eyeballs on it to make sure people know about it, because it's the easiest way to catch so many people at once. So then, yeah, it's that constant give and take of like, I'm marketing to you to get off of this thing, but I need this thing to market to you to get off of it. So I don't know. Maybe I'm making it too complicated.
No, I get what you're saying. I think people are navigating that. Like, I don't think you're alone, and I don't think it's like hypocritical, because I mean, like, that's what everyone has to do. And I think that, I think that is the best case scenario for social media, honestly, is finding inspiration and then taking it offline, seeing about an event and then going, like, having access to different ideas and different things, reading recommendations and then reading the book.
Right.
So I think that's the best case scenario.
Yeah. And I wonder if mentally for a lot of people, if we really finally just classified it as this is a place to shop.
Yeah.
This is a place to shop for things. This is a place to shop for ideas and shop for inspiration. And once you're done, you can get off and you go live your life out here. Because I think that's how I've tried to see it for myself. And it has been helpful in some ways that I'm like, no, this is a space where I go to maybe get some ideas. But then my line has been mentally, when I start feeling bad about myself, in any way, feeling like I'm not doing enough, or I haven't done this enough, or I'm not that enough, that's when it's time.
Yeah.
For me, that's how I've learned I'm saturated.
I think that's a very good tip.
Yeah. Unless I somehow train my algorithm to only give me the funny videos. And I'm going to tell you, the TikTok comment sections, some of the comedians that are hiding in there, I can't. They are some of the funniest. It's too good. And that's when I'm like, this is fine that I ate up 45 minutes of my life just laughing my ass off on my couch by myself. But, you know, that's the world we live in today.
Totally. Well, per usual, we don't have a lot of answers, but we have a lot of questions and thoughts and ideas. So take what works, leave the rest.
Yep.
We love you so much. We'll see you next week.